Social listening is huge. And I would say for those who have the ability and have the budget and have someone to, you know, really own that, social listening can be so powerful for your church to understand who is our audience. And while you may know who your audience is within your congregation, you may know who are you reaching that's coming into your doors.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by a special guest, Charissa Carnell from Samford University, and really excited to share with you her story of how she got into social media, like me, very much by accident and unintentionally, and how God has used her and taught her through her experiences. And I'm so excited for you to learn from her as she digs into her story a little bit and what she's learned and how that applies to the church. So, Charissa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Niels, thank you for asking me to be here. I'm so excited.
Can you share a little bit about what you do at Samford University and how you got into that role?
Yes. So currently I am running social media for Samford, primarily the flagship, which is what we call our kind of, you know, main university accounts across all of our social media channels. And then I act as basically as a consultant for all of our academic units on campus. So we have over 65 what we call primary social media accounts. And those are those that we are monitoring, that we are have a hand in, you know, the strategy and how things are going. So so that's the basic. I'm also managing a social media with students on campus. So that's really great to be able to teach them and help them understand, you know, what social media is beyond being an influencer, right? So for college students right now, that's like the big thing. And that's what they see. So that's been really fun. And of course, there's a million other things that come up throughout the day that that I deal with. But how I got into the role, I actually graduated from Samford way back in 2006. And, you know, went off and took my own career path, and then made the decision that I was ready to make a change from my last position, and had started looking around and really was looking at Samford. I love Samford, right? Like that is my heart. And I wanted to, I already tell everybody about it when they're looking at colleges or thinking about school. And so I thought, why not be on, you know, an employee to do that. And so I had been looking at jobs at Samford and had not seen anything that fit my qualifications. And I actually was looking at things like, there was like a position, I think, for director of Greek life. And I was going, could I do that? Like, maybe, you know, there's no way. I have no qualifications for that. And so I kind of put that away and was looking in other places. And one day I just pulled my laptop out and I literally sat there and said, and I remember sitting on my couch with my laptop closed, and I said, God, please, please let there be a social media manager position at Samford. Opened my laptop, logged into their website, looked at their jobs, and there it was, social media manager. They had never had this position before. This is brand new. And this required a move for my family. So, when I saw that, I was like, I literally seconds ago, you know, like I can't deny this. So I applied and got the job. And yeah, that's, I've been there 2 years now.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I hear a lot of people, and it's interesting how prominent that role of social media director, social media manager, social media specific jobs are becoming a very normal thing. You know, 5-10 years ago, it was very rare. But I think the advice that people would often ask me, how do you get a role in social media? How do you get a job in social media other than working directly for Facebook or someone like that? And at the end of the day, a lot of times, my recommendation still today is, go and let organizations know they need a social media manager. I think because it's not been a historic position, they need to create that position, because it's becoming more and more, it's a necessity for pretty much every organization, but it's also a lot to manage. And so it's fascinating that they created it and got open that door for you. And you had unique credentials for that role as well that obviously made you such a great fit with the historic understanding of the university and your experience in social media. So I want to dig into that. I'd love to know, though, what was your major in college? Anything related to social media that helped you with social media?
Well, no and yes. So I majored in journalism and mass communications with a minor in psychology. Okay. So the journalism and mass communications at that time in 2006. So for those listening who, I don't know, you know, who may not be as old as me, or I don't know, or maybe much older, I don't know, who aren't really sure where social media kind of started. But, you know, for me, Facebook or the Facebook.com launched on Stanford's campus my sophomore year of college. And, you know, and I mean, it was a different world. I feel like you could have an entire just on what was social media like back in the day, what were Facebook, what was Twitter and all of those. But, you know, it was a different world. And we were doing our own little like news stories on campus about this new thing called Facebook. And the campus was going crazy about Facebook, you know. And so it was journalism. We had no classes around it. You know, social media was really not even a term back then, I don't think. So there were no classes related to, because businesses weren't using social media. It was literally you were connecting with your friends and that was it. And so I say no in that sense. You know, when I came through and took and graduated with the journalism and mass communications degree, there was no part of it that said social media could be in your future. Now, with a degree like journalism and mass communications, there is. There are classes around social media. There are, you know, ethics classes around social media and things like that. A lot of my interns come from the JMC program at Stanford. And then a lot of them from like the marketing business area. So those are the two areas where, you know, if you have a degree in that nowadays, then yes, it is connected. But when I did it, it meant I was going to be working in a TV station, and that was it. That's my degree in 2006.
Interesting. Well, and I would imagine that even your psychology degree actually probably comes into a lot of what you do on social media as well, of just the human behavior aspect, because you have to understand this is a whole new way people are interacting with each other. And there's a huge psychological effect to that as to how you almost reverse engineer how to best engage people. Tell me, and so I was so fascinated, you and I connected for the first time yesterday, and so I was like, I wish I had a microphone to record this right now. and so basically reliving our conversation from yesterday. Can you share your story of how you basically went from that degree to your job today? What was your path into social media? You started with thefacebook.com, but what was your path professionally into social media?
So I graduated, and funny story, I had a job lined up in Birmingham, and I say lined up. It was not an official like acceptance yet, but this is a new position we're creating. It's around like, I think it was web producing something, and you know, we're looking for somebody and you'd be great for it. And 2 weeks before graduation, they called me up and said, "Hey, we can't offer you that position anymore because we had to make cuts and because no one was in that position. It was the first thing to go." And I was like, "Okay, I understand," you know, hang up. And I'm like, what do I do? I'm graduating in 2 weeks. I had every intention of staying in Birmingham. But I had interned every summer, and at Stanford, we have a Jan term. So some schools have a May term. So we had all of January where we could take classes, do internships. So I would intern every summer and every December and January at the Fox 10 WALA affiliate in Mobile, which is where I'm from. And so I was building connections there and everything. So when that happened, I called them up and I just said, "Okay, I thought I had a job and now I don't. Do you have anything open?" And thankfully, because I had interned so much and they all knew me, they were like, "Yes, we have openings." And they literally told the hiring manager, "Do not hire anyone until you meet with Sharissa," which he's like, "I've never met this girl. I don't know who she is." So I went in and I started out as a graphic designer, loosely termed. Yes. Graphic designer. I learned Photoshop for that position. And that was, you know, making the graphics, the box that you see on the news and the supers are across the bottom, things like that, the map where, you know, something happened. So that's how I started. And then I was promoted to producer, and then promoted to my ultimate dream of being on air. And I did a segment called the daily.com, which was basically, again, we didn't know social media at the time. So we were calling it new media, which I mean is still a term, but you know, but it was basically, we were talking about social media and anything digital. Yeah. And so it was the new media segment. And so because of that, I was using social media, one, just because I was sort of, I say I wasn't really an early adopter. I was like a later early adopter. I was using Twitter to find story ideas. And at the time, there were no media outlets really using social media, unless it was just individuals. But so here I was just looking at Twitter every day, because it was the one place that no one else in my newsroom were looking to find stories. And I knew I could have the stories that nobody else had because I was the only one there. And so that's how I just self-taught through Twitter. And doing it to learn Twitter, it was just, I had a completely different purpose. And I ended up doing a story on a company that the marketing director I had met through Twitter and loved their company and said, I want to do a story about this. It's in the digital space. It's really cool. So I did the story. And then we just stayed connected as friends on Twitter. And all in the meantime, I'm trying to get our... I'm starting to talk to them about, hey, we should really be using social media. And you know, you can imagine back then that was a difficult conversation because no one thought that way. And no one else in our area was doing this. And I think some of the national stations were starting to get into it. Like, again, it's okay. They have a lot more resources, so we just can't do that. And conversations were really difficult. And the marketing director for this up that I had did the story reached out and said, hey, I don't know if you're looking for a job, but we want you to be our social media manager. And I said, well, I'm not, but you know, let me look into it. And I turned them down twice. And they called me and said, we really want you. And I said, well, I've never done this before. You know, like, you look at my resume, I have nothing related to social media on there. And they said, we don't care. Mm-hmm. We can see from how you are personally on that you know what you're doing. And I said, okay, which I think resonates even now, you know, like it's all about personal branding and do you know what you're doing? If you're doing it for yourself, then you can do it for someone else. Of course, it's hard when you're like me, where I'm currently and have been for the past, you know, 10 years, social media for someone else. And it's really hard then to come back and do that for yourself and things when, you know, when you have the time. But anyway, so I took the leap, took the job, and so glad that I did. But you know, and I said, look, I don't have children yet. I don't have a family that's dependent on me and my, you know, income or anything like that. So it makes, let me just do it. And if it fails, then I'll go back to news. And it's okay, but it's worth a shot to try this. And because, you know, we were starting to hear at that point that social media is the big thing and, you know, it's going to, but then we were also saying it's just a fad and it's going to go away soon. And, so it was just this like 50-50 chance, let's try it. And so I did, and I was at the startup for a couple of years, and then we were bought by Western Union Financial Services.
Yeah.
So I made this another big leap from being at a startup where we literally were trial and error everything, you know, let's just do this and try and see what happens. To a Fortune 500 company where when I started, and let me back up. So when I joined Western Union, I was part of the product team of the startup that was bought. And sitting at dinner one night with a bunch of executives from Western Union and from the startup. And just through conversation, people were talking about how I had live streamed my wedding. And At the time, again, let's remember, Facebook Live was not a thing.
Yep.
Periscope, Meerkat, like none of these live streaming services were available. Yep. So it was Ustream and Livestream.tv were like the only two options.
Yeah.
And you couldn't do it from your phone.
Yep.
Just not even possible. So you had to use like a laptop or, you know, or some kind of camera plugged into a laptop or something. And so I live streamed my wedding partly because I had a lot of friends that I had met through Twitter who were just really interested in, you know, just being a part of my wedding day.
You were part of your life at that point.
Part of my life. Yeah. Exactly. And then also because I had my husband's, has a sister, brother-in-law, and their children who are missionaries overseas and were Indonesia. They were in Indonesia at the time and could not make the travel, you know, down for the wedding. So that was another reason. So we want them to be a part of it. I have all these Twitter friends that want to be a part of it. So let's just live. So that was just so, you know, mind blowing for a lot of people, at that time. And so we're sitting there at dinner and this conversation's coming up and the CEO of our startup goes, this girl, we're talking about social media and how, you know, what I've been doing. And he goes, this girl live streamed her wedding. Like, that's crazy. And other executives at Western Union were just like, what? And so it just kind of hit them like, okay, maybe she kind of knows what she's doing. So, they said, we're about to build our global social media team and we'd love for you to be on that team if you want to. And so of course I jumped at the chance. Yes, absolutely. So when I started, and I'm so talking about Fortune 500, you know, global company coming from a startup. When I started, we had a legal team that said, every post that you make and every reply that you make to a customer has to be approved by us before it goes out.
Yep.
Well, this is when, you know, it was taking
every reply.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. It was taking them, you know, 24, 48 hours.
Yeah.
A post, much less a reply.
Yeah.
And we were like, this is not, but this is the first time they'd ever had a social media team to really push out content like this. And so, so we were able to, I developed a community management playbook that really said, like, this is our voice. Mm-hmm. This is our tone. This is how we're going to do what we're doing. And so they, you know, went through that with a fine tooth comb and you said, okay, we approve this. As long as you stay within these parameters of this playbook, then you're good. We don't have to approve everything you say.
Win.
Like that's a huge,
huge win. You
know, huge win for us. And so I spent 5 years at Western Union. I led their global community management team. And then moved over to Sanford, where I am now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So what what stirred you to create the community manager playbook? I think about so many churches that there's this tension of, and I come from a Baptist background where we had to have a committee to vote on whether we're going to have a committee to do anything. And it was like, process, even in a small church, can be a big thing. And so you were in a Fortune 500 company that needed, you need process. And you don't want to, I still remember I've had pastors I work with that are loose cannons on Twitter, you know, and it's kind of like, okay, make sure he has a filter before he posts on Twitter. And so you've got to, there needs to be process, but there also with social media, the processes that worked for direct mail or email marketing or different platforms don't work on social media. So how did you go through that process of, I guess, where did the idea come from? And what was that process of creating that community playbook?
Yeah. So the idea actually, I can take no credit in that. Our VP of social media at Western Union, who is brilliant, came in and said, you know, she wanted me to run community. And initially I was just the community manager.
Yes.
I was the community manager. I was the person responding. And then we grew. And when we grew from 160,000 followers and so on Facebook to when we hit about 4.5 million to 5 million is when we were like, okay, we need more people doing this. I can't do this alone. And so that's when I started leading the team and we hired some people underneath me. But she was the one that said, we need a playbook and you need to create it. And I said, excuse me.
Yeah.
I've never done that. You know, once again, I've never done that.
Yeah.
like, yeah, but you can do it. So we actually partnered with a company called the Community Roundtable.
Yeah.
And they're fabulous with just community, anything community related in social media and digital, and worked with them on making sure that, you know, that it flowed well and, you know, using our own content and our own voice and tone, but just with putting that together, they were a really good partner for us. And yeah, so that's kind of where the idea came from. And then it was great. We used that to train other marketers across the company.
Yep.
So I would go and speak at conferences with, you know, other marketers. And it's so funny because you know, now we're at a point where I have my dates. That was around 2012-ish, 2013.
Yeah.
So we're at a point where people know social media by now, you know, like we're not in the early stages anymore. Like people know, everybody knows that they need it. And by really, I was shocked that Western Union did not have a team yet to do social media for them. And they were pretty late in the game. But I would go and speak and present this playbook and present, like, here's what we're doing in community management. Here's what we're seeing. We're seeing this negative sentiment change drastically to positive, and we're seeing people tell us that they trust our brand.
Yes.
A brand that didn't have a really good reputation to, you know, and really there's some, to some still doesn't have the best reputation, but we were able to change that perception of who we are. And so I'm talking to marketers in Paris and Dubai and Vienna and, you know, all across the world. Yeah. And they're listening and they're hearing this, and this girl from Alabama, and they thought I was so funny because of my accent, which to a lot of people, or to me, is, especially people here, they're like, you don't have an accent. And then, you know, you talk to someone from Paris and they're like, oh, and so they would come up to me after and go, how do I clone you? Mm. And I was like, well, let's talk about this, because that's the whole reason of the playbook. You don't have to clone me. You just need to take this playbook and go replicate what we have put, laid out and follow that.
Yes.
And so I think that's what's so interesting anywhere, any company, a church or a business, doesn't matter. If you can get the right people in place to put together this, a playbook, and that can be, mine was specifically for community management. That could be for content. That could be for anything, analytics, you know, anything that you're doing in social or digital. Putting together a playbook and then say, this is our thing. And yes, it's a living document. It changes. We edit it as we go, because social media is changing by the minute these days. And so take this and follow this, and you can, and I'm not going to say anyone can do it, but anyone can be trained and can learn and can gain that experience if you have a starting point.
Yeah.
It was crucial for us.
That's huge. I think if there's one takeaway, and we're going to get into some practical stuff for churches, but that I'm hearing immediately is your church should have a community management playbook. And I think, or let's just call it a social media playbook.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think it should. I think it should outline, here's the kind of content we post. Here's the kind of, here's how we respond. Here's how fast we respond. Here's even how we do advertising, or, you know, what is your playbook? And I think this goes for, and I shared with you yesterday, I've got my dad is a pastor of a small Methodist church in Texas, under 100 people, and he should have a social media playbook. Now, maybe for him, it's one page, you know, but it is a playbook. And here's how we empower volunteers in it. Here's how we, here's how I'm involved. I think that's a huge takeaway. You shared a little bit yesterday about the content strategy used at Western Union. I think it was fascinating that really, because I think this is a tension that a lot of ministries face of, we basically ministries get in the rhythm of like, hey, just come to church. And people begin to tune you out when you're just become a marketing voice, screaming that one call to action over and over again. How what was the content strategy for Western Union? Because when you think about Western Union, you don't think, oh, exciting, I know something fun we're going to say about money transactions.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how you developed that.
Yeah. So it started with us listening. So social listening is huge. And I would say for those who have the ability and have the budget and have someone to, you know, really own that, social listening can be so powerful for your church to understand who is our audience. And while you may know who your audience is within your congregation, you may know who you're, you know, who are you reaching that's coming into your doors. Let's look at the people who maybe you're hitting them in a touch point somewhere out in the digital world, but entered your doors yet. And so those are the people that we're really, because we're wanting people to come to our church, right? Yeah. That's the whole goal, is to get them in the doors. Well, we got to get them there. And so let's look at who are they and what do they care about? And so we did that. We set up listening and really spent some time pulling in data about our followers on social media and aligning that with our customers. So we're matching it to say, these are people that are following us and these are people that we know. We already know all this information about our customers. And so we matched that up and tried to look at what is a common theme that is running between all of these people that we can use to leverage content around.
Yes.
And for us, we found that that was food. So that was dishes, like looking like pictures of dishes, recipes, just individual food items, things like that. And the reason was because people were talking about food because most of our customers and our followers lived in a country that they were not born in. So they're from Mexico, live in the US, or they're from the Philippines and they live, you know, somewhere else. And for all of them, it was food is what connected them back to their home. Well, at the same time, they are using our services at Western Union to send money back home. And so it was a clear correlation for us. Okay, what reminds them of home is food. What are they using our services for to connect back home with someone or from home to wherever this family member lives?
Yeah.
And so we started creating content around food.
Yeah.
And there's, last time I looked, which was probably within the last couple months, they're still using this strategy at Western Union.
Nice.
So you can go look at it and see exactly what this looks like. And so we would create content around food, and sometimes it would be, you know, around a holiday or a celebration for a particular country or culture. But it was just always food. And I would say, I can't remember our exact percentages, but I want to say it was 70% was the food strategy.
Yeah.
Maybe 15% was actual like marketing our business.
Yep.
And we had like that 5% of, you know, like things pop up. And you know, for us, natural disasters were a big deal. Yes. So, tsunami, an earthquake that had devastation was a big impact for us as a business. And so we always had that 5% where something happened and there was a natural disaster. We had room in our content strategy to plug that in. And so it started with executives going, "What in the world are you doing?
Talking
about food. We are not the Food Network. We are not, you know, we have nothing to do with food."
Yeah.
And we said, "You're right. Our business has nothing to do with food. Our customers, it has everything to do with our customers because that's what they care about beyond our company."
Yeah.
And so our goal really, and this is where I think it relates so much to churches. Our goal was people are transacting with us. Usually it was on like a monthly basis. Sometimes it was weekly and sometimes it was annually.
Yeah.
And so we use social media to say, how can we connect with our customers when they're not transacting with us?
Yep.
We've got to be a part of their lives on a daily basis. And they're not, we can't force them to use Western Union every single day. And so how do we do that? And that's where with this content strategy, we were able to connect with them around something they cared about and something that was important to them. On a daily basis. And so on, you know, the 30th of the month, when they typically send money to that family member, if they've been engaging with us throughout the month, who are they going to think of first when they get ready to send money? Western Union. They know that's what we do. They have a connection with us now beyond service that we provide, they have to pay for. And so now they're going to use us. And we saw that happen. And so I think for churches, like, it's so, you know, we see that weekly, right? We're on a weekly round table, right? Where every Sunday and, you know, some Wednesdays or whatever, however that looks like for your church. And so instead of spending the whole week building up to what does Sunday look like, well, that's important and there's so much value there. But what about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? And we say that, I think, from the pulpit so much, you know, don't just give Jesus your all on Sunday. What about Monday and Tuesday? Yes. Well, let's do that as a church too. Let's give our congregation our all on those other 6 days of the week. And so that's where I think a great content strategy where we're meeting people where they are. And we're not just pushing, theology at them. We're not just throwing baptism dates and, you know, Easter production dates and come to service at this time and whatever, because why, what's their reason? Why would they do it? Right. Just like Western Union. Why would I use your service to send money? Because that's important to me, right? Like my money is important and I want to know that it's going to be in the right and good hands and it's going to know where it needs to go. Well, now we're looking at churches, people are taking their time and they're like, you're going to teach me something. So is it the right thing? Is it what I want to hear? And I don't mean that in like a what I want to hear, but you know, like, is it valuable? Is it what I'm supposed to be learning right now? And it's my time. Like, I'm going to spend a couple hours on a Sunday with you. Why, tell me why I should do that, you know, with your church. And so if we've already done that throughout the week, then it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, well, yeah, I'm going to try that church out because they gave me this value in an area outside of church. And I think we're good at that as people, right? Like, we do that. Standing in the lobby of your church as a pastor, you're not typically talking about theology unless you have that one member who loves to talk theology. But a visitor, you're not standing there just throwing theology at them, what you learned in Bible college, and then also saying, and then don't forget to come to our Easter egg hunt, and don't forget baptism is next. Have you been baptized? You know, that's just not our normal conversation. And I think we, as marketers, as people, we get on social media and we just think it's this thing completely different than normal, our normal lives. And it's really not. It looks different than us talking like this, but we've really got to understand that we just need to have our normal conversations, you know, just be humans, I guess, on social media. And so I think that that strategy to me could be so powerful and impactful for churches to take on a strategy like that, where we're not just talking about ourselves 7 days out of a week.
I think, boy, that is, you just shared so much gold. And if you're listening to this, what you probably need to do is just reverse back 5 minutes, you know, and just listen to that again, because I took away two core things out of what you just shared. And I think it's so valuable for church leaders of basically, let's do ministry between Sundays and using social media where people are engaged. Of the average American is spending 33 minutes a day on Facebook, and that's in, they're logging in, logging out, but be a part of that feed and be engaged. And so, and with that, don't just use it to market Sunday, use it to minister to them in those moments that you're engaging with them, and then do that in a social way. And so just as you moved out of that experience of mass media, social media is social. And so be human, be personal, and engage in a relational way. And so don't wait 24 hours, 48 hours to get your comments approved, to have a playbook so you know how to respond, and maybe empower volunteers or empower staff that they can immediately develop relationships on social media. So and I think your content strategy with Western Union, it speaks so loudly of basically, if you just convert food to ministry, you know, and it's in ministry in a very personal way. And so at the end of the day, we have so much to share. And so your pastor or your worship pastor or your youth pastor, you know, whoever, like, or your volunteers or people in your church creating content, and we all have a content creation device in our pocket. There's so much that I think we can do there from a content standpoint. And then I think to your point of the community standpoint, that's huge. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, and because I know people listening are probably going, well, okay, I don't have the ability to do this whole social listening thing. Yeah. And yeah, that takes a lot of data and that, and, but we were a giant company. We, you know, we had a lot of customers. We had to sift through full data. I think it could be as simple as starting with, if you have small groups in your church, and I mean small groups that are the model of, you know, do something you're interested in and get together as a group of people and do that thing. Like, look at that. And that can be a good indicator of what are some of the things that your congregation and the people that they're, that your small group leaders are bringing into the church.
Yes.
What are those topics that they're interested in? And maybe start there. Yes. And then I think it's okay, while we don't want to like change our trajectory, you know, constantly with content strategy, but it's okay to start with something and go, okay, it's not really resonating with people. Let's kind of move to the next topic and move to the next thing. And then you've got people within your church who also care about that thing. So if it's mountain biking, you know, and you've got a group that you know, and it's growing, it's people are mountain biking like crazy because of this small group, then goodness, let's talk about mountain biking.
Yeah.
The people in your church to say, what's the right gear? Where are the right places to go locally? You know, I don't mountain bike, so those are like the only two areas I can think of. But there's so much, I'm sure. What's the right kind of bike? How do you, you know, how do you tune up your bike or whatever? Like, you know, things like that. And now you're using your own congregation, and then they can engage. Because sure, maybe you don't know everything about mountain biking just because you're creating that content, but you've got people who do. They can help engage. Then when people come into the church, now they're seeing faces that they recognize. They've already built relationships with people on your Facebook page or wherever.
Yes.
And now they can connect in real life. So I think that's a real tactical way that churches could take this and go, well, how do we do this? How do we actually get started? Well, let's just look at your small groups if you have those. And let's start there, because that's at least something that's not church, you know, Sunday morning related that you can try and see if it works.
You know, there are, and I want you to share in a moment here, your final thought for church leaders. If there's one thing you want a church leader to take away, or action that you want them to take and following this. But I think a couple things that I want to just add to what you're saying is, as we create ministry content, valuable ministry content, it is now easier than ever for somebody to share their church with their friends by just hitting a share button on Facebook. And so by hitting that share, you know, making content that your congregation can share is a very valuable evangelistic asset that you're giving them on social media and allowing them to be relational on social media. I've got a pastor in Austin that I've been recently working with. And he is in every Sunday, he is encouraging his congregation to take their phones out and hit share on their Facebook live stream right now in their congregation. They have seen a 300% growth on their Facebook live from 1,000 a week to over 3,000 a week. Or I think, anyways, 3,500 a week, something, you know, huge growth of that live stream because he encouraged them to just hit a button on their phones in a moment. Creating good content doesn't have to be complicated, but it can be an incredible asset. The other side is really, I think this is probably the biggest takeaway from my perspective, focus on the community side of social media. Mm-hmm. Facebook at F8 yesterday, they shared, and this is not new news, but they shared that basically groups are where their biggest focus is from Facebook as a platform and even as a product within Facebook. The community aspect of groups is very significant. And so as you think about Facebook groups within your social media strategy, it is all about community. And so thinking about how can you build community of, and Nona Jones has been on the podcast a couple of times, talks about how basically your Facebook page is your front porch and your living room, you know, your Facebook group is your living room. Yes. And so how do you use those multiple platforms and then Facebook as a platform? But I think thinking holistically about all social networks in that way of how do we really build community? And community is hard work. I think a lot of people want to put content out there and want it to go viral. But at the core, what we're called to do as a church is to do community, to build community. And on social media, we have a unique opportunity to do that. So I think we need to be prioritizing that. And it is going to be hard. It is going to be messy. And it's going to change. And you're going to have to change with it. So it's not going to be easy. I don't want to say there's a shortcut to this.
But
it's core to what we do. So Charissa, as we wrap up, I'd love for you to share kind of your final thoughts as you want to speak to the church leaders. So
you actually just spurred a few just then when you were talking, and it's funny, community, you're right. Building a community and managing a community is hard work. It takes time. Yeah. I actually gave a presentation on building communities and how communities are like puppies. Hmm. And the whole thing was, you know, they'll go to the bathroom that you have to clean it up, yeah, and they'll chew your good shoes, and, yeah, but they'll also be loyal and they'll love you. And, you know, like all the things. And so you're exactly right. So the first thing I'm going to say is for those listening who maybe are thinking, which probably if you're listening, you believe in social media in the church. But, you know, if you're still thinking, well, I don't know, does this make sense? I guess one final thought in that area is just the fact that we want to get the message out right about Christ every way possible.
Yeah.
And while social media may seem like this really terrible thing at times, and people are really not using it the best way, that's an opportunity for us to step in and use the creativity that God gives us. And, you know, I pray all the time for divine creativity, you know? And so like the creativity that God gives us to step in and change the landscape of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of these things. And so I guess I would just put that out there to say, like, really think about it and really like put weight to it to see, you know, to say like, this is just another avenue for us to make Christ known.
Yeah.
And we can just wrap our heads around the best way to do that, then let's do it. The other thing is authenticity. That is so important to me. One of the things at Western Union was it was important for us that we did not create scripts that our community managers then copied and pasted into responses to our customers. And that's what made our legal team really nervous. We got to approve, you know, all of that. And where the playbook, you know, clearly comes in hand. But that was important to us because we need to be authentic as a company. Like, they're responding to us and they are seeing a logo. And for a lot of churches, it's the same way. They're either seeing a logo or they're seeing the pastor because they happen to know who that is or see that person on our website. And so it's important for us to do our best through words to put a face or a human person behind that computer, because it is a human person responding. Unless you have a bot, you know, a Facebook bot, then it is a human person sitting there typing out a response. And so let's put that authenticity and bring value to the person that's doing that. And, you know, show that we care about people. And then groups. So another tactical thing and that I think could be really helpful is, and you mentioned, I mean, you said this, but really looking at your page as a way to communicate to people who don't necessarily know who you are as a church and haven't necessarily stepped foot in your building. And then use groups. And I just talked to another church about this recently about they were, you know, wanting to grow their groups. And I was like, goodness, well, let's use Facebook groups to get small group leaders in and community with them to help them start to, you know, raise up other leaders and all this. And so groups, and I loved hearing that Facebook, and we knew this was coming, right? Like we had heard that all the stuff changes coming to Facebook, and we knew that it was going to be something. And so I love hearing that because that's been something I've been thinking about, that churches really need to use groups for, like, that's like your inner, like you join our church. Awesome. Yeah. Be in our Facebook group now.
Yeah.
And that's where you can say, hey, don't forget about the Easter egg hunt. Like now we've got people who already come to our church and want to be part of these events.
Yes.
And that's your perfect place to do that.
Yep.
Versus your page where people see you and don't know who you are yet. And so, I think, you know, authenticity, I'll just end with that. Authenticity is so important. Create a content strategy around things that people care about outside of you and your church.
Yes.
And eventually that will lead them to relationship, that will lead them to trust and building trust with your church. And then they'll care about your church and want to be a part of it.
Boy, that is so good. Sure. So thank you so much for speaking into church leaders. How can church leaders connect with you online?
Yes. Yeah, so SharissaCarnell.com and Sharissa Carnell across social media networks.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we will put that in the show notes on socialmedia.church. So go to the website there and check out those links. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you would rate this podcast or leave a review wherever it is that you're listening, we appreciate so much you taking the time to listen to this episode.